passage of our philosopher Mystagogue. When a man dies, he goes through these same experiences as those who have their consciousness increased in the mysteries. Thus in the terms teleoton, or to die, and teleuskai, to be initiated, we have an exact correspondence, word to word and fact to fact. First of all, there are wanderings and wearying journeyings and paths on which we look with suspicion and that seem to have no end. Then before the end, every kind of terror, shuddering, trembling, sweating, stupor. But at last, a marvelous light shines out to meet us. Pure spots and far fields welcome us, with song and dance and the solemnities of sacred sounds and holy sights. In which state, he who has already perfected himself in all things and received initiation, reaches his full freedom, and passing everywhere at will, receives the crown and accomplishes his mystery, in communion with the holy and pure. Gazing down upon the unpurified multitude of the uninitiated who are still in life, wallowing in the deep mire and mist, and herded together below him, abiding in misery from fear of death and want of faith in the blessedness of the soul life. For you should know that the intercourse and conjunction of the soul with body is contrary to nature. Plutarch's Fragments. The further consideration of this suggestion, however, will more conveniently come later, when the reader has become acquainted with the vision. The treatise is in the form of a Platonic dialogue. The persons of the dialogue are Plutarch himself, who is the chief speaker, Patroclus, his son-in-law, Timon, his brother, and Olympicus, an intimate friend. The scene is the portico of the Temple of Apollo at Delphi. The tract is addressed to a certain Quintus, who must have been a Roman, but of whom nothing further is known. In the course of his argument, Plutarch remarks that no punishment is more distressing and makes us more ashamed than to see our children suffering through our misdeeds. And if the soul of an impious lawbreaker could, after death, see his children or friends or family in great adversity because of him and paying the penalty of his misdeeds, no one would ever be able to persuade him, even for the wealth of Zeus, to be unjust or licentious again on his return to earth. I could tell you a true story, Logos, which I lately heard, he continues, but I am afraid you would think it a tale, or mythos. I therefore confine myself to probability only. As, however, the others pressed for the story, Plutarch replied, "Permit me first to finish the argument as to probabilities, and then, if you like, I will set the tale going, if indeed it be a tale." Plutarch here evidently intends to be understood that for him the story is logos and not mythos, and by logos he means as evidently that it is based on fact and not probability. This is plain from his own words, and is further strengthened by the general use at that date of the word logos for a serious narrative, especially a sacred discourse or a story of initiation. It is further of interest to note that Plato, at the end of his story of the vision of Ur, refers to it as a mythos. Can Plutarch have had this in mind, and does he wish to draw a distinction between his logos and the famous myth of Plato? It is more than probable that the myths of Plato had been frequently discussed in the schools, and that there were various opinions as to how they were to be taken. The term myth had fallen into disrepute among the learned, and Plutarch here, as elsewhere, uses logos as a better description of a narrative connected with the doctrines of initiation. Plutarch tells us that the hero of his story was a certain Aridaeus of Soli, a town on the seacoast of Asia Minor. He was an intimate friend of Protogenes of Tarsus, Plutarch on Love, who stayed with Plutarch for some time at Delphi. Aridaeus related his experiences to Protogenes and other intimate friends, and so we may suppose that Plutarch first heard the story from Protogenes, and finding it somewhat in keeping with what he himself had been taught or seen dramatically represented in one or other of the initiatory rites through which he had passed, he polished it up and amplified it to suit his purpose. This Aridaeus had lived a notorious life of great profligacy and villainy, and he was a sort of millionaire scoundrel of the period. Report had it that on his sending to ask the oracle of Amphilochus at Malus in Cilicia whether there was any chance of his living a better life for the rest of his days, he received the reply that he would do better when he was dead. Shortly after, Aridaeus had a severe fall, and though he